Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop. For this Tuesday, October 10th, I'm Ray Graff. Writing is the focus of today's program, and joining us in the studio is novelist Barbara Chepitis. She is here to answer your questions about the process of creative writing. She is a favorite on this program. Always great to have her here. And I thought since Halloween is approaching, we might talk about scary stories today. And Barbara's no stranger to the odd supernatural story. And so maybe we'll talk about how a story can get scary and what you have to do. And maybe we'll swap a few scary stories. Our number here is 800-348-2551 on this Shocktober edition of the Writers Forum. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop, Barbara Chepitis, writing, and your calls coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you interested in writing? Maybe you need a little push here or there, a little pointer? Well, Barbara Chepitis is here. She's author of 11 published novels, including The Amber and Feeding Christine, each one based on family history. She's also the author of two nonfiction books, Feathers of Hope and Saving Eagle Mitch. She's the founder of the storytelling trio The Snickering Witches, and teaches writing and public speaking at St. Rose College. Barbara Chepitis, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Nice to have you here on the Shocktober. give us a call at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. So I was speaking with the producers of our podcast, Listen with the Lights On.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently you were on and scared the pants off them. What happened?
Well, you have to listen to the podcast to know the full story. But I basically told of, I was doing research for a novel, and I went out on an actual paranormal investigation.
Yeah.
With a guy named Johnny Graves, of course. We ended up in a basement with things being thrown about.
Really?
Really.
I mean, really, things were picked
really,
up and thrown about
really,
by invisible entities.
Really, you, really.
Now, has that made it into any of your writing at this point?
It made it into the novel in a different form because some strange things happened. The people, after all this happened, the people that owned the house wanted to keep the ghost.
Can you keep a ghost?
I don't know. Hmm. And that was sort of the end of that story and why I'm more afraid of the living than the dead.
I like that.
And that idea of hanging on to ghosts definitely made it into one of my Jaguar novels, where she dealt with a bunch of ghosts that were basically being held hostage and had to clear the space.
How do you paint a picture? I assume there are times and scenes in novels or short stories where you want to scare. And how do you set that stage? It's not as comedy's hard. Right. I would assume horror is hard as well.
It is. And I don't think what I write is not horror.
No.
You would call it more suspense, if mm-hmm. you know, if it falls into any of those categories. I mean, that series with Jaguar Adams is the fear series, because there's fear in every title, and their job is to deal with fears, the fears that drive crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to sort of learn a lot about fear itself from a psychological perspective in order to write them. But I also work carefully with the pacing when I'm trying to frighten people, when I'm trying to keep them up at night. And I think in that sense, it's the same as comedy. It's about timing.
Yeah.
You have to, your words, you can't just think of them as having meaning. You have to think of them as having sound and a sort of a physical substance. So you use the right word at the right time. It's not all, oh my God, she was afraid. No,
right.
No. It's the wind moved softly through her hair against the back of her neck.
That is so interesting,
you know?
Though, drawing a parallel between comedy and writing something that there is a pacing. And
oh,
I assume
absolutely.
You don't rush the punchline in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You set it up. And I assume you're talking about the same thing there.
Yep. You absolutely have to set it up. You have to set up. Well, you know, and in general, when you're writing, all you have are these, you know, black marks on the page. And you have to create everything with those marks. So you have to create a complete physical experience just with that. And a lot of it is first creating the atmosphere. the place they're in. What does it feel like to be there? What kind of contrast are you trying to set up? You know, it could be a very sort of industrial metallic place, but there's something squishy on the ground, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah. Oh, one of the Jaguar novels, Learning Fear, which is loosely based on a local college, very loosely, because this is a fictional college. It's fictional.
Okay.
But this particular college happens to have underground tunnels.
Many do.
Yes, many do, that the students use to travel from class to class. And I just couldn't wait to set up a murder in it, you know.
Of course. Barbara Chapitis is our guest. We talk writing today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. I remember Plattsburgh State, those underground tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, a little daunting.
Yeah, yeah.
What scares you when you read a book?
What scares me?
Now, we'll leave politics out of this for a
moment. Yeah, okay. Let's not go there. When I was in third grade, I was looking for something to read, and my mother always had books around, so I picked one up. I said, Mommy, is this a good book? And she said, yeah, go read it, you know, like that. She had five kids.
Yeah.
And it was In Cold Blood by Truman Capote.
Oh, good heavens. Good heavens.
And I read it. I read the whole thing, and I didn't sleep for a year.
Yeah, that's terrifying stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So when people behave in ways that you can't predict at all, that actually is, I think, the most frightening thing for me.
I felt the same way as a kid reading Helter Skelter, which is another one I picked off my mother's shelf.
Yeah,
and she said, go ahead.
What our mothers did for us.
How about that? Yeah, scarred us for life. Our number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Barbara Chapitis. Doesn't have to be about scary stories. If you have any question about the creative process, what are you working on right now?
I just am finishing up. I'm on the almost last draft of a novel called The Devil Deals.
Oh,
I guess that's
kind of
scary.
What's that about?
It's associated with my novel, The Amber, so it's one of those main characters. It shows how he became who he is. He sold his soul to the devil. Now he has to work for a certain demon, and his job is to corrupt humans. So it was fun structurally because what you're doing is, instead of here's the bad guy and this is how we're going to figure out how to get him, it's how do you create a bad guy?
When you create a bad guy, are you careful to make sure that you include some sympathetic traits?
Well, with my main character, his name is Nick, my guy who sold his soul.
Yeah,
he's ambivalent. He does not really want to be under the thumb of these demons.
But he sold his soul.
But he sold his soul.
So you get what you pay for.
Right. And the only way he can get it back is to either trade in a better soul or undo his original wrong. And he's trying to figure out if he can do either of those.
When you write anything, but in this in particular, are you thinking cinematically?
I think I do, in the sense that I want to create the visuals of the writing as strongly as everything else. But when I translate it into script, I have to go more visual and I have to let go of all that sort of interior monologue.
Very
stuff,
interesting.
You know, that you can do so lavishly.
But a sense of place is important.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
I always think of those Hammer films and just the set design,
yeah,
the vivid color of the old castles, or even the old Frankenstein film, the first one, those Universal sets.
Yeah. But to a large extent, the writer's not totally, well, they're very little, writers are in charge of very little in the world of Hollywood, really. What you're doing with a script is kind of a blueprint.
No, but what I mean, and again, I know you're not writing scripts, although maybe someday.
Oh, no, I am.
You are.
Yeah, I'm actually right. Recently, I signed up with a film management company out of L.A., and we are slowly sort of moving forward to see what they want to do with my material.
So they have optioned your material, or
they haven't optioned it. Management and agents work differently. Management tries to manage your whole sort of career in this realm, and they actually can't make a sale for you. What they can do is put you in the room, as they keep saying, in the room, when you get in the room with producers and agents and directors and so on, based on what they think is, you know, of interest from your work.
Barbara Chepitis is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. We talk writing today on Vox Pop, and we'll be right back.
Support for WMT comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Offering design-build services that feature passive solar and energy-efficient designs, supporting the local economy using local materials. Prefabricated house kits also available. Noble-home.net. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, Saratoga Springs, New York, presenting Keep Quiet, October 15th at 7 p.m., panel discussion and reception to follow at Temple Sinai, saratogasinai.org for details. State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7, statestreetfruit.com. And Schenectady Symphony's Orchestra, announcing their 84th season featuring The Echoes of Europe, Sunday, October 22nd, 3 p.m. at Proctor's Theater, SchenectadySymphony.org for information.
Oh yeah, a little Henry Mancini from the Peter Gunn soundtrack. That's nice here on a Vox Pop. And it is Writing Today with Barbara Chepitis. Our number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to David in Albany. David, you're on.
Just curious if the author had any recommendations for people that don't know how to type very well but still want to write. It would be handwritten or like a voice-activated software would be your recommendation. And also I wanted to ask her if she believes in demons.
Okay. Well, let's do the last one first, and then we'll get to the voice-to-text software.
Do I believe in demons? I believe in evil, and I believe that I don't always know what form it takes. I believe that the possibilities of form are kind of as infinite as the universe itself.
Interesting.
So.
Right. And then I believe in demons, too.
All right.
Okay. About your first question, I am not sure. I do not use voice-to-text software, so I can't make any recommendations about what works well. You might want to consult with someplace like the Hudson Valley Writers Guild or another writers organization. They might have more information on that. Okay. The only other thing you can do is handwrite and get someone to type it for you. And I actually worked with a woman who did that for years.
Huh. That's got to take a lot of patience. Thank you, David, for the call. When you sit down to write, you have an idea, or maybe you just discipline-wise, you say, I'm going to sit down at this time and I'm going to write something. Handwrite, type.
I go back and forth. When I'm beginning a project, I handwrite.
Really?
Yeah. And usually those are just voluminous notes, which I often lose. But it seems like once I've written them down, they stay with me in some
way. So the process of writing them down,
I'm kind of writing them on my brain.
Imprints them on your brain.
Yeah.
So you handwrite a lot of the time.
Yes. And then I go to when I'm at the keyboard, and then I go to the keyboard.
I think that interface between what's in your mind and what's on the paper is tricky.
Yes. Yes, it is tricky. There's been a lot of studies that have shown students who take notes by hand in classes actually retain the information better and understand it better.
As opposed to what?
Typing it in their laptops or onto their whatever their machines are.
We never did that in our day.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know
exactly.
You could do that. Of course, I never took either notes.
They want to. I don't let them in my writing classes.
Oh, really?
I insist on the handwriting. There's some kind of a neural connection that you develop. It keeps you from trying to absorb too much, for one thing, because, you can, if you record it or you've got it all, and it can be overwhelming. So it makes your brain sort of condense it to the fine points.
Barbara Chepitis is our guest on this writing forum edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. You teach writing at St. Rose, yes?
Yes.
I don't know how to phrase the question. But it's like
something dangerous is about to happen.
No,
I think.
It's like teaching jazz to a musician. You can teach all the technique in the world, but can you teach someone to be a writer?
You can teach someone to think creatively. Absolutely, you can.
How?
It looks pretty weird. I've done it. I think I ran the only creative thinking skills class at SUNY Albany for quite a few years. But it doesn't look like traditional academic work. You know?
Can you give me an example?
All right. I had my students dance blindfold.
to what end? And did OSHA know about it? Those are the two questions.
We had spotters. You know, half the class was moving about the room blindfolded. The other half was spotting. I wanted them to get comfortable with moving through the unknown in a really physical way, because that's what a lot of writing is about.
But how can you, as a young budding writer or hope to be a writer, how can you expect to get much practical
application
out of this?
Oh, I wrote a whole chapter based on that
really?
Exercise. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they wrote a lot based on it, too, because it was a pretty... it was a deep experience, and it was very physical. They had the sense of people around. So it was all ghostly, almost.
Yeah.
The sense of people moving around them. Occasionally, something would touch them, and they didn't know what it was. The people who were watching them were very moved by their helplessness and wrote about that, what it means to be helpless.
Interesting.
In the dark. So it became an incredibly deep. And that's one thing we did among many. But I think when you're trying to teach students to think imaginatively, you want to get them back to their sort of childhood self, you know?
It's funny. In so many artistic realms, I talk to people, whether it's photography or music or whatever, oftentimes that's the goal.
Yeah.
What is why? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with writing as an adult?
You can, but you have to do both at once. When you're writing, you actually are using two parts of your brain that normally function separately. One is the executive organization part, and the other is the daydreaming part. What I found is that when you put students into a writing class, they want only the executive organization because the rest has been kind of taught out of them.
Right.
So I have to get them back to the daydreaming and then help them to find the balance of comfort by using both at once, because when you write, you're actually going back and forth between them very rapidly.
And can kids, I'll call them kids, but they're college students, be trained to let that part light back on that part of their
yeah,
brain?
Mostly. You know, there are a few that no.
And they become accountants.
And that's fine. That's
fine. It's a different major.
But I want them to have that experience also because it promotes empathy with others. You know, it has all these social skill values that go along with it, and it can be applied, and we talk about this, it can be applied to whatever work they do in other ways. So I want them to refine that. And then we talk about the editing process is a whole different thing.
That's nuts and bolts.
Yeah, nuts and bolts.
Barbara Chapitis is our guest here. Writing is the topic of our Vox Pop today. 800-348-2551 is the phone number. Ashley in Pittsfield. Ashley, you're on.
Hey. Hi, I was just calling in because I heard a caller call about voice to text program.
Oh yeah,
and Google Docs are the excellent one that we use at our students at school.
Oh okay,
Google, and it's really good.
Google Docs.
Yes, and try underneath the tools. It's new, but it's really accurate. And I know we like to write too, but it's good to have the voice to text sometimes if you really just can't get the paper in pen.
Yeah, and it doesn't turn your words into something strange.
No, it's really beautiful. It works really well, very, very accurate. You even say next line, it goes to next line and number if you want it to.
Wow.
It's really intuitive.
Okay.
I was very impressed with it today.
Well, thanks, Ashley. We appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We talk about the interface between what is in your head and what is on the paper, and that, it would seem, is something quite remarkable, a text to page. However, it seems fraught with danger.
Too much diarrhea
of the brain.
I'm not sure how the editing process would work with it, because that's where when I write and I use a keyboard, I always overwrite, and that's my style. Not everyone does. A lot of people underwrite and then have to go back in and backfill. I have to cut down.
Why do you overwrite?
Because I'm going very fast and I'm not censoring myself. So if I say something too much or more than once, it's because I'm trying to get somewhere. And I allow myself to get to where I'm trying to go, knowing I can edit later.
Have you ever read about automatic writing?
I have.
It was a thing when there were a lot of seances in the 20s or whatever. Do you ever feel that when you're writing, it's coming from another place?
Oh, absolutely. When it's going well, in that, especially in the early phases, I absolutely love letting go of controlling the process, knowing it's just kind of happening. I think it doesn't happen if you don't prepare the soil, you know?
Yeah.
You have to have a good bed of earth with lots of fertility in it. And
that is the research that you do?
That's the research I do, and it's the thinking I do. A lot of my planning process is mental. That's not true for everyone, but that's how my process works. And when I get to a certain point, I know this story. I'm living in it. And I sit down to write, then yeah, it does feel automatic. It feels like all this stuff is just pouring out of me from a different place. I actually think of it as me going to somewhere else.
So you're quite sure that when you look at this a day later or 2 days later, you know that came from you.
I do. I just don't always know how.
Barbara Gepitis is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Maura in Rexford. Maura, you're on.
Hi. This has to do with my son, who has ADHD that wasn't diagnosed until he was 15. So when he was learning to write, he had executive skills function issues and small motor skills functions. And so he doesn't believe, even though he's profoundly gifted in math and science, he doesn't believe himself to be a good writer, which is not true. He's wonderful with language. How do you teach a child to believe in themselves as a writer, or to kind of reteach that part that they missed when they were going through the middle school years?
Yeah, I don't know if mom can do it, you know? Sometimes it takes...
I'm thinking about exercises. What kind of exercises would be supportive?
What kind of exercises? Well, does he just hate to write right now?
He doesn't hate it. He, because he's gifted, he's in AP language.
Uh-huh.
And even though he's 16, and he's in all AP classes. And so he doesn't believe himself to be a good writer. He doesn't actually procrastinate because he has good discipline, but he doesn't believe in himself.
Even though
he's a really good writer.
Has he done free writing exercises? Has he done writing exercises around prompts?
No. I don't know what that is.
Prompts are a way you get the ball rolling.
Yes. I'm sorry. I misheard you. Yes, he has.
Oh, okay. Does he prefer writing like nonfiction stuff or fiction stuff? Does he have an inherent interest?
Nonfiction. Doesn't connect to fiction.
The best thing you can do is give him space and room to write on the topic of his choice. What does he want to explore?
Great.
And then have him start out by writing freely about it. Just generate some initial responses based on, for instance, if it's, I want to write about the formation of ice. Have him start with describing the ice physically. Have him start with any memories he has about ice. Do a couple of paragraphs very quickly and time them. Like, you got 3 minutes, you got 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then move from there into the more research-oriented stuff.
Maura, thank you for the call. Barbara Gepitis is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. But sometimes people just don't want to write. Yeah?
Sometimes they don't. Yeah, you know, I have students in my class who that's not their main interest. They're stuck in my class anyway. So
I remember taking a short story class in college, and I was awful. I was terrible. You know, I gave it my best, but it was not. You want a 30-second commercial? I can write that for
you.
But,
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, and you know, you think about people like John Kennedy Toole. Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he did himself in.
Yeah.
And then there in under his bed or whatever was this gem.
Yep.
Have you ever had a chance to read that?
I have read it, and it is a gem. It's wonderful. But, you know, I have this theory about that, that we prefer our artists dead. Mm. It's Shocktober, right?
It is Shocktober, sure.
Because there's so much easier to sell. You know, it's that supply demand thing.
You make a point.
And they're much quieter.
not as good on talk shows.
No, not as good on talk shows. But you can talk about them.
You make a point. Barbara Chepitis, our guest. James and Hudson is next. James, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to agree with Barbara. I grew up, I couldn't, even though I've always been a great reader, I couldn't write an essay to save my life growing up in high school and college. And then I learned to just write out everything and then go back and edit.
Yep.
So I overwrite. And just doing the free flow and then going back, it's like, oh, that doesn't work, that doesn't work, that doesn't work. So I cut back, and it's like that has been, I mean, I haven't written anything more than copy that's successful. But, you know, I just go with the free flow, and then you just let it, and then you go back and you can snip out. It's like gardening.
That's right.
You know, you snip out the bad bugs.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely,
that's
I agree.
That's the way I work.
Yes.
So that's.
And I have found that that's the best way to instruct my students work. And a lot of them have never had that experience.
So you will not instruct your students to say, okay, you're writing a story, create an outline?
No.
Okay.
We talk about outlines, but there are so many different ways of doing that. And some people, like me, I do all my outlining in my head and with random notes that fly about. And some people really need to set down the structure in a certain way. So my role is to help them find the process that works best for them, that's most efficient for them.
But some literary types will, in fact, when writing when nonfiction, an outline would seem to be necessary. One of my daughters wanted to write a scary story the other day.
Ooh.
She said, "You got any ideas?" I said, "All right, I got a couple. Let's make an outline." Apparently, I said the wrong thing. Don't make an outline. Angela, just start writing.
Right.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Dave in Schenectady. Dave, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wondered if you could give me some advice on finding an agent or an editor or maybe to do some self-publishing. I have a couple of manuscripts that I worked on for the last 6 or 8 years, and I've edited them, rewritten them, and so on and so forth. And I just wondered, I'd like to take a next step, but I'm just not sure how to go about it.
Are they fiction or nonfiction?
Both fiction, but they're kind of memoir types.
Okay. Literary fiction? Or would you say
I guess you could say that,
okay.
Yep.
The best way to start is to look at a website called agentquery.com.
Agentquery.com.
Mm-hmm. And they list all the agents and or almost all of them, and what they represent. I'm getting a little echo here.
On the phone. Don't worry.
Okay.
It's in your head, Barbara.
I know. I'm talking back to myself. So you can look up who's looking for what kind of work and what they need from you in order to read it. And they have how to write a query letter to an agent, how to let them know, you know, what it is you're working on, what you hope to sell. And they also list small presses that will accept work without an agent. So it's a really, really good site to start with. Self-publishing is a whole different realm.
Okay.
Start with this before you consider self-publishing, because you can see what kind of reaction you get from professionals.
All right, Dave, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. On this Shocktober edition of Vox Pop, writing with Barbara Chepitis, let's go over to line 5. And Jim in North Pownell. Jim, you're on.
Hey there.
Hey.
Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a plug. I subscribe to a literary magazine out of North Carolina called The Sun.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a section called Readers' Write, and I have submitted several pieces to them. I have not been published yet, but it's a great way to break into writing.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful magazine.
Oh, it's super. It's absolutely super, and I would recommend it to anybody that you know wishes to write and wants to get their work published. They don't pay for Readers' Write, but it's a good way to break into the writing industry.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and there are many magazines like that have similar ways of breaking in for those who are new.
Yep.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot.
Okay, have a good one.
You too. Barbara Chepitis is our guest. We'll take a quick break here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. I see Zach has cued the Mancini, so back to it.
Support for WMC comes from Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Open 7 days with authentic Mexican lunch, U-Fruit, Petting Zoo, Farm Fresh Market, Cider Donuts, and Bakery. New Love Apple Art Space, 518-828-5048. The Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting Miss Tess and the Talkbacks on Wednesday night, Jane Doe on Thursday night, and Friday night, Rev Tour. Dinner served at 5 p.m. TheEgremontBarn.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more, waterwheelvillage.com. Stammel String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows, restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stammelstring.com. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com and on Facebook.
You ever get up around 5 o'clock in the morning, Barbara?
Yeah.
I watch Peter Gunn sometimes at 5 o'clock in the morning on MeTV. That's the way my life is. Sad, really. Our number is 800-348-2551. Whoops, Ray, you jerk, Ray. Let's go to Lou in Albany. Lou, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask the guest about how creative can you be with things like punctuation and, you know, capitalization and the mechanics of the English language. Because my own personal... I consider myself a poetaster, person who writes inferior poetry. But I like to also, I want to create a visual effect along with the literary context of what I write. Can you shed some light on that for me?
Well, look at E.E. Cummings, who kind of broke the mold on that and said, yeah, if I want to capitalize it, I will. If not, I won't. Who needs punctuation?
Heretic.
He threw it all out the window. And was brilliant. I think in poetry, you can get away with it more than in other kinds of writing because poetry is about that. And people go into reading poetry expecting something different. If you're writing narrative of any kind, punctuation and that stuff serves as a signpost to the reader, which is visual and quick and easy. So I'd say go for it. Play with it. Play with your food.
All right, Lou, thank you for the call. It occurred to me the other day in one of my many internal rants about the destruction of society that emails and texts have destroyed proper syntax, punctuation, and grammar. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem for your students who are writing prose?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not sure, you know, is it the email that destroyed it? Maybe, or did they destroy it themselves and it just shows up in email? It's a chicken and egg thing. But yes, I found that carelessness, and I think it's because it just goes so fast.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, when my mother sat down to write a letter, she sat down with a pen in her hand.
Right, wrote a first draft and then a second draft?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think it's part of the transformation of our language, and ultimately it will lead to a Tower of Babel situation where no one can understand each other, and we're all real in deep trouble. All right, back to the phones we go. Enough about ranting. Dave in Waterville. Dave, you're on.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
My question is about revising short stories, and, you know, it seems the ideal situation would be to be able to read your own story as though you were reading it for the first time. But obviously that's impossible, because not only do you know what's on the page, you know everything else that you thought of when you wrote this story.
Yep.
So you know, you say, oh, yeah, I get all this, not realizing the reader won't or is getting too much. Do you have any suggestions for how you can train yourself to read your work as though for the first time?
Oh, I love this question.
You can't.
Well, what's the next
give it up
thing?
if you put it away for, you know, a couple of years, yeah, then when you go back to it, it will be fresh in, to a certain extent. But your brain is full, you know, when you're approaching it. You need someone else to read it. Mm-hmm. Have people you trust. You know, you don't have to be in a writer's workshop, although that's where a lot of people do that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. someone you trust, have them read it and have a set of questions. Direct them on what you want answered. Have I said okay. too much? Have I said too little? What do you need more information about? What's working? What kind of movie is playing in your mind when you read this? Mm-hmm. What emotions are you feeling? Because basically we're trying to manipulate a reader to feel what we want them to feel. Mm-hmm. So if you have your set of questions, give it to someone and let them read it to you. Another thing you can do that will help just with small revisions is read it out loud. Mm-hmm. Or have someone read it out loud to you so you can hear it as well as see it. Switch how you read it. If you write on the computer, print it out and read it on the page for that kind of small work too. But definitely get another reader. No writer works without an editor.
Okay, now that's very interesting. Dave, thank you for the call. I would think, and again, I'm not a writer, but if you're a writer and you work with another editor, it's quite possible the editor isn't getting what you're looking for and then will edit things that you don't want edited.
That's only happened to me once.
Yeah.
And that was with a total idiot.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you for that.
I'm sorry. Okay. It wasn't you, Ray.
Okay.
It wasn't anyone you know who really had their own game going
yeah.
around it. All the editors I've worked with have been very cautious. They're not like, when I work in the world of script, they're just going to do whatever they
right.
want.
Hack and chop
yeah.
and move.
And you're like, okay, just write the check.
Write the check.
Write
nice.
The check. That's fine. Do what you want. But I found that in the world of printed material that I've been shown a lot of respect. They're buying stuff from me,
right.
you know, so they wouldn't be investing
I
if they
it.
Weren't going to be respectful.
I would think that this is one thing that you can teach. I think in any art form, the ability to edit oneself is one of the key things to being a professional. So I would think that is one thing that you can teach the kids.
Well, you can teach them. You first really have to teach them how to edit each other.
Very interesting.
You know, I started as a copy editor. So I had all this experience in working with other people's work and what worked for me as a reader. So I had that set in my brain. I can edit my own work to a certain extent, but I always, always have another reader as well. Always. Because I'm aware that I have to bridge the gap between this and them.
Between your head
yeah,
and the
their,
reader.
Yeah, and what they take in. And I can't do that alone. That's a collaborative process.
Barbara
my stuff gets edited, like, I can't tell you how many times. You know, first reader, agent, editor, copy editor, back to the editor, back to the proofreader, back to me, every time in between. It goes through like 5-6 people.
Does it ever get to the point where you say, gosh, I don't recognize this?
No.
Really?
No, it never has.
Our guest is Barbara Chapitis, and the number is 800-348-2551. Laura in Fishkill. Laura, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've read 2 children's books. I sent them out to about 30 agents, and after receiving 5 responses, I'm kind of wondering, in your opinion, do you think that agents choose books and clients based more so on personal preference or on market trends?
Both. Their personal preference is intimately intertwined with market trends.
Right. Oh, I know. That's sort of what I've been finding myself.
Yeah.
So it's like sort of a difference between writing from your heart and writing to the market.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I don't
advise. Okay.
Writing to the market is tough because the market is this ever-shifting beast. And you never know where it's going to bite you next. So you might
right.
as well try and take what you have and find the right person who knows that market and can work with it.
What if you write for, thank you, Laura, what if you write for something for which there is no market?
then you're a true writer.
And that's the thing, though.
That's the scariest part of Shocktober.
But isn't that the thing that stands the test of time? In other words, let's do a musical allegory here. The music that somebody says, I'm going to create this because this is what the kids like.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that sounds stale and horrible
yeah.
40 years later, 100 years later.
Yeah.
The stuff that the artist stays true to themselves.
Yep.
That's what lasts.
I think so, ultimately. I think that you have to be authentic in your writing.
Barbara Chepitis, our guest, and let's go to Dave in North Adams. Dave.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it, and it's a very good program. I'm not a writer. I just had a question, a general question, and it has to do with writer's block. I read and hear accomplished writers that are very successful, even award-winning. All of a sudden, they're writing a book, and they stop because they can't finish it. They call it writer's block. And I'm going to use an example based on biographies and things that I've read about Ernest Hemingway. I heard he was working on a book at the end, and he couldn't finish it because he had writer's block. How can somebody, I guess this versus, this has to do with being inspired and letting it flow through you and putting it on paper versus having a structure and outline and training, but how could somebody that's well-established, award-winning, noted for their work, and all of a sudden they can't do it anymore because they have writers, something called writer's block. Could you explain that a little bit to me?
Yeah, and is writer's block a myth?
I think it's a generic term that we throw on a lot of different situations. When a writer is unable to complete a work. For me, sometimes that means this work isn't the right work right now. Move on to a different work. Sometimes it means it's just not ready. It's just not time. And if you don't live enough, long enough for it to become time, then people see that as, oh, that was a bad writer's block. With Hemingway, well, he suffered with depression. He drank enormously. He's the one who said famously, "Write drunk, edit sober."
Is that what you do?
No, I don't. Because if I drink when I'm writing, I'll just fall asleep. But I will say I'm pretty drunk on the words and on the story itself. Yeah. I'm pretty out there when I'm writing.
Well, thank you.
But I think that writer's block is too generic a term for some very complex situations.
And presumably you have had a point where you not necessarily had writer's block, but you said, okay, I'm going nowhere with this one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't call it writer's block. I call it, I'm going nowhere with this one.
Moving on to the next thing.
Right.
All right, let's go over to Joanna in South Hadley. You're on.
Thank you so much. I'm a published author, and I just want to put in a little plug for the Right Angles Conference, which comes up annually November 18th at Mount Holyoke College. The registration will open in a week. They open it a month before the conference. It's limited to 120 folks, great keynote speakers, legal clinics, one-on-one agents, everything. Just WRITE Angles, ANGLES.com.
Terrific. We can't give prices.
Conference.
So don't give any prices, Joanna, okay?
Nope, I won't. Nope, rightanglesconference.com. Folks can go there for info. Thanks.
Thanks for the info.
Okay, we got that plug out of the way. Let's go to darnest thing. It's a
go up.
Hello. Oh, mercy.
Seek the mountains.
You know what's going on? Okay, well, folks, I think this might be my last program. I'm. Let's go to Kathy. If this is in fact Kathy in Clintondale, you're on.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
I have an idea for how to deal with the proofreading. I'm a geologist, and I do lots and lots of technical writing. And you know what it's like. You're trying to read it, and you wrote it. So you know what you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this software called NaturalSoft. It has a whole bunch of choices of different voices, men, women, different accents and things. So I just pick one and have it read my work to me.
Oh, that's great.
And you'll hear right away when you've left things
that's
out
right.
or done something you didn't want to say. Or
mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. I really can't do more to recommend it.
I absolutely. I read aloud a lot, especially when I'm working with script, where it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
But I make my students do it as well. But the name of this is NaturalSoft or something?
NaturalSoft. And,
okay.
And I think the thing is actually called Natural Reader is the program, but NaturalSoft,
yeah.
I think, are the people that developed it.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
And going the other way, I've never succeeded at being able to talk into the computer and let it write.
Well, things are...
I can do it with a cell phone, but I can't do it with trying to write technical work.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine.
Anyway, great program today. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. So when you're writing scripts, do you and your husband act out the parts?
Kind of.
Really?
Not the like murdering parts, no.
No, no. But would you like to?
Depends on the day.
Barbara Chapitis is our guest here. 800-348-2551. Assuming I don't press a lot of wrong buttons, let's go to Adrian in New Paltz. Adrian, you're on.
Hey, hi, Ray.
Hey.
Memoirs is the subject, that's all. You get to a certain age, you want to start telling your stories. And I wonder if your guest knows of any particular group, website, podcast, whatever, where people who want to do memoirs in particular, here's my life story, blah, blah, blah.
The blah, blah, blah is the tricky part of memoirs.
That's a tricky part. Well, and by the way, Ray, if we fill the lockbox, you and Alan are going to do a solid week of guests with the round table, correct?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, if we fill it up, we put $1 million in there, then you don't have to do the drive, correct?
Oh, that is correct. Oh, yeah, the show will be as soon as the drive is over. And thank you for reminding me. Hang in there for a minute, Adrian.
Yeah.
I mean, the fun drive is coming up. You can go fill the lockbox right now at WAMC.org.
Yeah.
Thanks for keeping
Let's
me on point.
Overfill the lockbox, and we'll do Ray and Alan 1 hour, and then the round table the next hour. What an idea. You give us what we want, right?
Okay. All right. All right. So the question. Back to the question.
Memoirs. I don't know of any groups where you are in New Paltz, correct?
I am, but I'm on the internet. I mean, I can scope out a website or a podcast or whatever. Hopefully.
Yeah, right. I am not familiar with particular workshops or groups. I really would recommend looking locally. Something about the interaction is helpful, especially with something as intimate as memoir. You know?
Well, you know, that Moth Radio Hour, I've been listening to that where people tell stories and everything.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, gee whiz. What if there were a similar venue for people to tell their life stories? Of course, not as long, but in an abbreviated state or something. So, I just thought I'd call and see if you had anything on your radar.
I would look locally.
Thanks, man. We appreciate the call. What makes a good memoir in general? Most of us mere mortals lead extraordinarily dull
lives. Blah, blah, blah,
lies. Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of blah, blah, blah memoirs. What makes a good one?
I think people mistake. They think a memoir has to be like your entire life. A memoir is not an autobiography.
Yeah.
A memoir is generally sort of encapsulated with a certain part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, Out of Africa was a memoir of her time there and what came after. Eat, Pray, Love, right? So it's usually there's a narrative arc to it.
Are the successful ones very honest, or can they be phony?
Very honest.
Can there be a good phony memoir?
Never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
All right. So once again, what are you working on right now?
Right now I'm finishing up The Devil Deals. I'm working on a bunch of business stuff for this management team I have to put together.
Really?
Synopses of all the scripts I've ever written and a bunch of concepts.
And how many scripts have you written?
About a dozen.
Really?
Really.
And covering what genres,
all
roughly?
Of them.
Really?
I am transgenre.
Really?
Yes.
But not zombie porn,
and
clearly.
And bi-textual.
Boy, I'm glad the program's almost over. Do you have a website?
I do. I have not played with it in a long time. I'm doing a lot of my stuff like in my blog.
Okay, and where's that?
A Literary Lunch at Blogspot.
A Literary Lunch at
Blogspot.
Barbara Chapitis, fabulous job. And so nice having
you
here today.
So nice to be here.
Glad we could share a cup of coffee. And
next time I'll tell my dog ghost story.
What, after Shocktober? All right, fine. Support comes from the University at Albany Theater Program, offering individualized education within a student-centered theater major to help train theater professionals for the 21st century, albany.edu/theater. Whitney's Farm Market on Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring their own grown mums in a rainbow of colors, plus Indian corn, ornamental pumpkins, corn stalks, and gourds for fall, whitneysfarm.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. And Hawkins House, Bennington, Vermont, a crafts market featuring Ed Levin and other handcrafted jewelry, pottery, blown glass, woodenware, clothing, handbags, accessories, Vermont products, and more, hawkinshouse.net. Thanks again to Barbara Chepitis for being here today. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Thanks to Dina Salzman for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. Tomorrow on the program, we will have a pair of real estate experts on the program in a steel cage death match. So tune in for that at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.